Good morning and welcome to Perspectives on WFSU-FM. I'm Lynn Hatterin for Tom Flanagan. We invite you to participate in the show today. You can email us at perspectives@wfsu.org, call us at 414-1234, or if you're outside the listening area, the number is 1-800-926-8809. This morning, we're taking a break from our local election shows to discuss the changing landscape of Tallahassee that's happening around us. Joining us in the studio today are Tallahassee City Commissioner Gil Ziffer, one of the few not running for anything this year.
And good very morning. Pleased about that.
Also here today is Wayne Tedder with the Leon County Tallahassee County Planning Department. Woo, it's a mouthful. Wayne, it seems like you have offices everywhere. You don't know how many numbers I called to get you. Good morning.
I think that's not what the purpose is.
And giving us the perspective from the Tallahassee Chamber, we have Will Butler, president of Real Estate NSYNC, the development company that created College Town.
Thank you. Good to be here. Good morning.
Good morning, everyone. So I want to start this topic off, or this conversation off, by talking about something that became a real issue about a week ago in the City Commission, Commissioner Ziffer, and that was the conversation around sidewalks.
Sure.
There was kind of a moment there when it seemed like, you know, you get a sidewalk. Well, you get a sidewalk. Well, if I get a sidewalk, then you know, I mean, it was a sidewalk frenzy, but it's rooted in something that probably a lot of people have noticed around town, is that some areas have sidewalks, others don't. Others have sidewalks in disrepair. And so I want to talk about this a bit, and just to ask, how in the world does the city go about deciding where to put a sidewalk? What community needs a sidewalk?
Sure. Actually, I'm going to separate the two because there are two processes going on here. What happened at the workshop, it was actually a budget workshop, was a conversation about money that had been taken mm-hmm. out of the original budget to go towards sidewalks. One of our road systems, Live Oak Plantation Road that connects Meridian with Thomasville Road, has become more of I don't want to say cut through, but it's used a lot more than it was a few years ago. That's the first thing. The second thing is the neighborhood demographic has changed. At one time, it was older and fewer people of a family age that had young children or children. And so the combination between a lot more traffic on it and a lot more people that want to utilize a sidewalk system, they started to go through the neighborhood, a process a few years ago where we outlined to them what they needed to do to accomplish a point where they could get a sidewalk. And the representative from the neighborhood came to us and said, you know, here we are. We've done everything you asked and we're ready for our sidewalk. We've been meeting with the neighborhood and a few of us felt that it was appropriate to go ahead and push that forward. At the same time, there's another road in our system, which is Magnolia on the south side, mm-hmm. which also is desperately in need of a sidewalk. And the broader issue is that we have tens, probably 50 miles worth of sidewalks. I mean, we have so many sidewalks that we need. But these particular roads, for at least the commission, we felt that these roads, more than any others at this point, needed the sidewalks put in as quickly as possible. So we moved that through to have our staff put that on the budget, and we'll hopefully hear back in September how we're going to be able to do that. It's a priority. One of the things that's been set forth in our sales tax extension, which we will hopefully pass in November, is I think it's $40 or $50 million worth of sidewalks that we're going to plan to build. And we'll try to plan those as quickly as possible and get those in place.
You know, Mr. Tedder, you deal a lot with the planning part of this. And one of the issues that I've heard is that the reason Tallahassee's sidewalk system is kind of so helter-skelter right now is because as the times have changed, our codes have changed. And newer communities have sidewalks. Older communities may not have sidewalks. You're talking about Magnolia. You've got Indian Head Acres over there. That's probably an example of this. You know, how do you guys try and integrate all of these different systems?
Yeah, Lynn, you kind of hit the nail right on the head. Was over a period of time, we had absolutely no regulations that required sidewalks when development was being constructed. And additionally, when we built roads in the community, we were kind of building roads to move automobiles, not necessarily people. So in the last 10 to 12 years, our community, and I say our community, both the city and county commissions have sat down and said, you know, having sidewalks and connecting people to businesses from their neighborhoods, connecting neighborhood folks with each other, providing alternative modes of transportation so you can connect people that live in residential areas to our mass transit system that drives along some of these major roadway networks. It is a requirement now for any development or any new development to build sidewalks along the frontage of their property. So that's one step that the city and county have both taken to say sidewalks are important to us. Commissioner Ziffer also mentioned sales tax projects. We have identified in our community over $100 million of sidewalk needs from past mistakes, if you just want to call it what it is. So now we're having to go back and look at those areas and prioritize those projects. One thing that I would like to give the listeners a little bit of background is we've had sidewalk priorities for many years, and we've had a number of sidewalk lists. I think at one time there's about 7 different sidewalk lists. About 5 years ago, we said, you know what, we really need a single priority list that, you know, beginning with top projects, move down and kind of focus us on what the community's priorities are. And a lot of that is how we've been developing recently. I've seen a lot more urban development. And we also have been, as a community, promoting greater access to our Star Metro system. And you have to have safe routes for those people to travel from their neighborhoods to those other modes of transportation that we have. So I would say I think the numbers were about 93% of the projects to support the Star Metro reconfiguration to connect those neighborhoods to those routes have been completed. So now we're at a point where what is our next big priority for our community? So
let me ask you about that sidewalk list for just a second.
Sure.
Because something interesting that also happened was there was some conversation about projects getting to be able to jump the list. And I don't necessarily know if that's actually the case, but I guess what I see is, you know, whenever the city says, well, we want to focus on this neighborhood and do some development here, any and all infrastructure project associated with that neighborhood, you know, gets done. And I'm going to assume here that so do the sidewalks associated with that project too. So say the city wants to do, I think you guys have the Southside Cares Initiative. That one comes with a couple of different sidewalks, you know.
Potentially, yes.
Potentially. You know, that could be a project that gets bumped to the front because just, you know, the nature of it being there. So I'm really curious about this particular list because I know that it's being revised right now.
So,
Commissioner,
I'll do this. I'm not on the target issue group that this process is working through. At the commission, we have several different – they're called target issue groups, and each commissioner serves on two. And what they do is they allow discussion items to come through a smaller group before they percolate up to the commission because mm-hmm. maybe they're not worthy, maybe they are worthy, and that way we don't have 50-hour meetings, you know, so we – have these target issue groups. It's beneficial to us, also to the community. So right now that's moving through long-range planning, I believe, target issue group, which is Commissioner Miller and Commissioner Maddox.
Correct.
And they are coming up with – and I think they developed what the criteria are because there's another big part of this whole sidewalk issue, and that is right-of-way. Mm. And not all sidewalks cost the same to build. They may, as far as concrete costs, might cost the same, but if you can't afford to buy the right-of-way – then it can blow up the whole potential to build that sidewalk. Additionally, there are terrain issues. So I guess to try to get back to your question, there is a list a priority list that we had, but the reasons why we build sidewalks has changed a little bit. So the sidewalk list itself is being revised. I will say Live Oak Plantation a few years ago was number one on the list. Mm-hmm. And there's some things that occurred that all of a sudden moved it down. There was no fault of, quite frankly, the neighbors that live there.
Gotcha.
So it's being revised, and I think come September we'll have a far better list.
Gotcha. Well, let's go. We have a caller here on line one, Joe. Joe, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Greetings. Good morning.
When is West Starp Street going to get a sidewalk starting at Mission Road going in back toward Ocala Road?
Mission to Ocala. Now, that came up at the last city commission, too. Mr. Tedder, you want that one?
Yes. Tharp Street and the reconstruction and reconfiguration of Tharp Street is one of the projects that has been long established in our community as a need. And every time we look at widening the road or reconstructing the road, we look at adding sidewalks to that street. That street is actually a county roadway, which very, very important point right here is that within the city limits, you have city roadways, you have county roadways, and there's a substantial number of county roadways as well as state roadways and a substantial amount of state roadways. So this one happens to be a county project, but they have also included that on the future sales tax extension list. So if that is passed in the future, that will be a priority to do that. So, but until then, it's a lack of funding to get that project moving forward.
Well, what about the logistics of this? I mean, you said this one was a county road, so this goes out of the hands of the city. Now it has it's bumped up to basically another governing body.
Technically, yes. Every time you have a county roadway inside the city limits, the decision cannot be made by necessarily the city. Now, the city may say, you know, they have some input on the design and the location, but at the end of the day, that roadway segment is a county roadway, and the design and consideration and funding would be a county process.
Wasn't Magnolia also a county road?
Most of Magnolia is a county roadway. There is a small segment that is a state road, believe that or not.
Oh, dear.
Yes.
So within Tallahassee, we're dealing with city and state and local county regulations.
Absolutely.
Well, I want to ask you about this. You know, the impact that sidewalks have in a community. I know that, you know, your basis is in real estate development, but I wonder, you know, is a community in terms of property value and in terms of, you know, attractiveness better off when it has a sidewalk in it?
I think that the answer is yes, and it's more than I think. I mean, we've demonstrated through various developments and the value, the disposition of the lot sales that sidewalks absolutely add value. People want to exercise. They want to be more active, young and old. And so it's obvious that in urban environments as well as suburban environments, sidewalks are pretty much standard operating procedure these days. Around College Town and in the downtown area that I'm highly engaged in currently, it's absolutely a priority. It's one of the key infrastructure elements that we believe has to be in place for us to be successful. To the point of the all of the developers working with the city and Public Works to advance fund, even when the city doesn't have the current funding in place, getting the sidewalks in place. So it's absolutely critical.
Gotcha. And we're going to go for a quick break here, but we will come right back and continue this conversation. You're listening to Perspectives. Good morning and thank you for listening. We are here on Perspectives discussing Tallahassee redevelopment and all of the wonderful issues that come with it. You can give us a call at 414-1234 or if you're outside the listening area, 1-800-926-8809. And I'm Lynn Hatter, still in for Tom Flanagan. We're going to continue our conversation here with something that has become kind of a standard issue, and that is our airport and the difficulty getting in and out of Tallahassee in it. If you're a frequent flyer, you know you have to go from Tallahassee to Atlanta, Tallahassee to Fort Lauderdale, Tallahassee to Charlotte to connect anywhere. There's been some conversation, though, about trying to get more carriers to service us. And I'm just curious about where we are with this conversation. I know that we recently lost the direct flights to Washington, D.C., which I know I used. And I'm pretty sure a lot of other people did, too.
Yeah, and that was no fault of the popularity of the flight because it was a fairly well-utilized aircraft. The airlines a few years ago learned that they could fly less, charge more, and make more money. Mm-hmm. And that's essentially what we have going on. And regional airports, of which we are one, are feeling the brunt of that. They like any other business, want to make money. The one thing that we can do, which we have been doing, which has helped us, it was one of the reasons we got that Washington flight when we did, is we lower what's referred to as the landing fees. We charge airlines a landing fee for each person that comes in on a flight. And the way we can lower those is we keep our expenses down at the airport, hopefully raise revenue through different merchants that are out there. And we also have the potential for land development, which I probably will touch on a little bit. We have about 1,000 acres, when I say we, the city of Tallahassee, that is around the airport. Mm-hmm. And we are, as quickly as possible, going through a process where we can have that land available for immediate development. The airport sits in what's called an enterprise zone, and any funds that are generated within that zone stay within the airport. So if we're able to lease land, if we're able to bring businesses in out there that will either create, let's say, manufacturing sites or distribution sites, the money, the profit that's generated off that stays in the airport, which helps us lower the landing fees even more. So the more we can provide profitability for the airlines, the more attractive we are. At the same time, they do like having a terminal that is attractive, which is one of the reasons we did some of those improvements a few years ago. We have had Commissioner Maddox was, I think, recently at a conference in Canada where he met with, I believe it was JetBlue. And they are looking, and there are others that are looking, but they are interested in profitability. So we're trying to bring down those landing fees so that we have more airlines looking at us. But it's difficult because, as I said, the airlines are not interested in expanding unless they can make money.
Well, let's talk about that. Some room for development here, and hopefully, it, you know, maybe it's the whole "if we build it, they will come." Well, you work in this, so I mean, what's happening here?
Well, I think that clearly there is an opportunity at the airport. I know Gil is keenly aware of that and has led several discussions in that effort. You know, our airport was located outside of Tallahassee for a reason, because the jets create noise and people don't really want to live around an airport. At the same time, that creates a little bit of a challenge in terms of trying to develop something commercially, because there's nobody there to support the commercial development. The second thing that's a little bit of a challenge on that acreage is it's currently – it's owned by the federal government. And we lease it. And so when you ask a private developer to go in and build a warehouse or some sort of commercial building, they have to do it on a ground lease, which is a little more challenging to finance. And therefore, it just creates another obstacle, another hurdle in terms of trying to create that value out there that Gil's talking about. I know that there's been a lot of discussion and planning that's going on around how we can do some things to try to accelerate some of that. And I think that as we continue that discussion, we might be met with some success.
But when you if I can just add one thing, when you consider our airport underutilized, airspace terribly underutilized, and you go to a Jacksonville or a Tampa or Orlando or Atlanta, where the cost for space or land near it is so much higher in addition to any other costs that are associated with whatever they're going to be doing there. Within 500 miles of the city of Tallahassee, you're in Cuba, you're in Texas, you're in Washington, D.C. And so we have a good opportunity, particularly when you consider Port St. Joe opening up to international traffic because of the widening of the Panama Canal. We could potentially be in a position where we develop these relationships where our airport becomes even more valuable, even though there are obstacles to develop there, because you have airspace you can utilize to get to places you need to be.
Let me ask this question, though, because one of the issues that Commissioner Maddox raised, and there was this kind of back and forth, and I also think it was Mayor Marks, we are basically within 4 hours of most major destinations. You can get in a car and drive there. It's much cheaper to drive than to fly. And so I am wondering if that hinders us and how it hinders us. You know, I think Mayor Marks made the term cheeks and seats and kind of cited the state's travel ban as sort of hindering us, again, in terms of growth with our airport.
Well, it is substantial. If you look at our airport numbers, our implayments and deplayments, when the state kicked in the restrictions for travel, you know, it dropped significantly. And it is a challenge for us. But it's in place. And it's there, and we need to deal with it and try to find other ways that we can get folks in those planes and lower those fares.
So right now we heard potential destinations, direct flights to Fort Lauderdale. I think maybe JetBlue would probably do one of those.
Well, Silver Airlines, we have a new airline, Silver Airlines, that flies to Orlando and I believe to Tampa.
Right.
And through there they connect. And if you go on and you check their fares – Mm-hmm. It's pretty inexpensive. The other thing that's very deceiving about our flights, and I know that people and they're right, they're justified that our flights can be very expensive. On the other hand, you can go on there and maybe today go on there and you can get a round trip to New York for here for $250, whereas next week you'll go on and it'll be $750. It fluctuates so radically. The airlines keep track of their inventory, and when they need to fill those seats, they discount those sites. Seats.
Gotcha.
Right. And I don't think it can be understated that the state cutting back is – I mean, that's we don't have a corporate presence. And so that's what drives the amount of flight opportunities you have. And Tallahassee is – our biggest corporation is the state. And so therefore, if they're cutting back, that has a – that makes it very challenging for us to drive more traffic into Tallahassee.
What are we doing about that? Because right now our economy is basically built off of state workers, university workers, which are basically state workers. And then if it's not that sector, then it's basically people who are working in the service industry, all of the wonderful local businesses that we have, the boutique shops. But we don't seem to have, I guess, kind of a third leg to stand on here. Mm-hmm. And I'm really curious about what the city is doing to try and get other companies more private sector growth into our area.
Let me take that. The city and county both have been very supportive and very active in trying to retain what we do manufacture in this community, and that is young minds. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think this third leg or whatever you want to call it for the stool is going to come from. If you – and I chaired the Economic Development Council for years. I mean, you can go big game hunting, and we try to bring companies to Tallahassee. It's a very difficult thing to do. But if – where I see the future is in entrepreneurialism. It doesn't matter where you live. You can make – a very successful business venture wherever you are, as long as you've got some key elements in place. I know through FSU, through the city, we've been working on incubators. We've been working on creating an environment where the young minds that we're producing want to stay, create value here, and then that value is not exported to Orlando, Tampa, Atlanta. The money that they make flows to our community. And it's a lot of it is about the environment in which these folks want to live, and it's a more urban environment. And so you're seeing our downtown, based on the policies that are being made at the city and through Wayne's department, really they get it, and they're providing support, the infrastructure, the commitment to make that happen. It's not a short-term fix. You know, I like to say this is not a 100-yard dash. It's a marathon. But slowly we're finding our voice, and it's cracking less. And we're maturing as a community, and leadership recognizes that.
Well, we're definitely changing, Wayne. Talk about this because, I mean, this is essentially your job, planning for growth in our area. And what are we seeing? What's happening now?
Well, I think what we've seen, we have an area within about an 18-square-mile area in our downtown area. We call it our multimodal transportation district. And just about, I would say about 90% of the development that has occurred in our community, even in the worst economic times that we have experienced in Leon County, it's happening right there in that spot. And it's in that urban environment that Will's talking about. It is a national trend. People want that kind of environment, and we need to be ready for it. So we've been at least in the last 10 to 12 years, setting up all of our policies, all of our land development regulations to encourage people to come into that area and have that environment. So from a regulatory perspective, I think we're as open as possible to have that urban environment right in the heart of our downtown.
So you're talking about, I'm assuming, possibly the area of Midtown, the area directly in our real physical downtown. I think Tallahassee was recently named as like one of the best cities for building within the limits in terms of compactness.
Sprawl.
Yeah, we're anti-sprawl, essentially, and I'm assuming that's a direct kind of result of the planning process that's been going on. So what are you guys asking businesses to do in this particular area? What are some of the rules and regulations that you guys have been putting in place here?
Well, first of all, we had rules dealing with concurrency. And for those out there who do not understand what concurrency is you basically have to pay for your transportation impacts for any new development. That was one of the biggest obstacles we had in our community is – basically, the closer you got to our downtown area, the more you had to pay because all the roads were over capacity. And what we're saying is if we really want people to come to our downtown area, we got to make it at least a lot less costly for them to do that. But at the same time, we've got to have all the urban infrastructure. We've got to have the sidewalks, so that is a very important thing. Other things that are important to our downtown, we still need to have open spaces in our downtown. In places like Cascades Park, provides exactly that kind of amenity for those downtown residents. So as long as we have the sewer, the electric, the water, the mass transit, all that urban infrastructure to support it, we've kind of lifted all those regulatory barriers for folks to come in to, and build in our downtown area.
And the other thing is a few years ago, the decision was made when we clearly had a road system that was in dire need of improvement, was to actually bring a four-lane road down to a two-lane road. And I'm talking about Gaines Street. Mm-hmm. And by doing that with the wide sidewalks and the median and creating slowing traffic on some level, but creating a sense of, gee, this looks like a good road to live near. And Will can speak to this, you know, the literally hundreds of millions of dollars worth of investment we have on the road system. Now, a few years ago, as a result of some dollars that became available to us and the need to improve a road system because of flooding, Franklin Boulevard, four-lane road, brought it down to two lanes, wide sidewalks, walking trails going into Cascades Park. And if you look down that road system, what's happening on each side of it is improving considerably. These are things that government can do that spurs better development, private sector better development. We'll go in there and we'll fix these roads. We may have talked about it before, maybe did on the air, but Cascades Park, people like living near green spaces. I firmly believe we'll probably see over the next few years people wanting to do some development on South Monroe Street because people will want to live near Gaines Street. Near Cascades Park.
You know, let me ask about this. You talked about Gaines Street, and, you know, we're here right off of Gaines. And I'm not going to lie, there was about a month-long period here in the summer when, you know, we're here in Innovation Park. The Orange Avenue Bridge is locked up.
Yeah.
Gaines Street is locked up, and we were sort of kind of here on an island. Who makes these decisions?
Well, Lynn, we did that deliberately to keep you on an island.
You know, nobody likes WFH, so I'm wondering.
I remember at the workshop y'all talking about that.
The idea was is then you wouldn't do the pledge. No, I'm kidding.
Well, let's be honest. You've got 70,000 students that hit this town in the middle of August. And both of those road segments you just referenced are heavily traveled by the student population. So if you're not going to do it in the summer, when are you going to do
it?
And so, I mean, it's an inconvenience, but you know what? When you grow, there's some growing pains. But I think it was very well thought out. It was communicated and coordinated with the universities, Florida A&M and Florida State, TCC.
The state, the county, the city.
Yeah, everybody.
Yeah, and unfortunately, the road system for Orange Avenue, that had to be done because there were real safety issues with that bridge. They were having concerns with, I know, our emergency vehicles going on that bridge. And so it had to be closed and redone. Now, it was finished a month or two in advance.
Yeah.
That's right.
I just drove on it coming out here, this new road system.
I was really happy I got to drive on it myself. One of the things that I am wondering about, it seems like we actually have a caller on the line, so let's actually go there. Chester, you're on line one, and you want to speak specifically to the issue of bicycles.
Yes. I haven't heard bicycle infrastructure discussed yet. And, you know, one of the things that was great about Franklin Boulevard is that not only was it narrowed and got rid of kind of a dangerous ditch in the middle, but also bicycle lanes were put in. And if you look at any city that has a lot of good industry and a lot of local business, they also have good bicycle infrastructure. If you even look at a local city, Gainesville has done a ton to make their bicycle infrastructure much better, and it's a much more pleasant place to be because you see more people riding bikes and more people walking.
Gotcha. Thank you, Chester. Wayne, you want the bicycles. Go for
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. This is a very good segue into another very important part of our community. In the past couple of years, we've spent a lot of time and effort to try to reconstruct where we had the ability to put bicycle lanes in place. The planning department staff has worked with the bicycling community, and both throughout the city and the county, and they have established a bicycle route. So, and the idea is, where is it safe? Where is it the most convenient? You know, you don't want bicyclists trying to trudge up hills, but if there's flat areas for them to navigate throughout the community, that is done. It's identified. It's identified on our webpage for the planning department. Certainly be glad to get that information to you at a later point. But it has been a focus of our community, and we're proud that we are a bicycle-friendly community designation, and we're only – everything that we do, we keep looking at those amenities, adding them to our roadway system.
Well, I was going to add if you – I'm sorry.
Well, I have a quick question for you because I know that, you know, the issue of bicyclist safety has been very prevalent in our community. Is anyone doing anything with educating drivers about the new roads? Because I confess, the other day we were coming down one of the roads by FSU, and I didn't recognize the green thing. You know, so I drove up to the light, and then I looked, and I'm like, there's a sign that says back, and I'm like, I did it, but I honestly didn't know. And so I wonder if that's actually a common thing. I don't believe that I'm in the minority here on this one. But I wonder, you know, what are you doing to educate the drivers who may just not recognize these
things?
Well,
when we introduced the green boxes, we tried through the media to let people know. And I guess that was one newscast you didn't say or read about. But I think we've got those mostly near the university,
mm-hmm.
And mainly because that's where most of our bicycle traffic is. But we live, unfortunately, I shouldn't say unfortunately, but we live in a city that, and this is a big concern of ours when we expanded the Star Metro routes, is when people come to traffic lights and they make a right,
mm-hmm.
they look left. And they don't look right. They don't look to see if there's a pedestrian crossing the street to get to a bus stop. They don't look to see if there's a bicycle coming up on the right. And that's going to require greater effort on our part. And I think it's something that we're going to have to do simply because we're introducing more bike paths. If you look at the major road systems we put into place the last 10 years, the Capitol Circle, Northeast and Southeast, and what we're going to be doing hopefully at the airport, it's huge bike paths. In fact, you can basically take a bike pass from our north side all the way down to St. Mark's.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Good connectors. Once again, though, to do that within the city, you've got right-of-way purchases and an awful lot of money comes into it. I think at some point we may look at some road systems changing where we actually take out some roads and we actually create just bike lanes and bike traffic. Other cities have done it, particularly they have large college populations.
Well, real quick, in the urban environment again, and that's really my sandbox these days, mm-hmm. it's absolutely a priority of local government. We're not just the connectors and alleys and lanes, but places to park your bike, secure your bike. Scooters, all of these things are being addressed in every one of these projects. And there are hundreds of thousands of dollars that are being spent by the private sector in response to the new local government policy. And it's being embraced. So I think it's probably we may not be as far along as Gainesville, but it's coming.
Gotcha.
And if I can just say from an economic development perspective, there are people, just like we said, want that in an urban environment, but they also want those trail systems to get out and enjoy our community. And it's an essential part to make us work economically.
Gotcha. And we're going to take a quick break. We will be right back in a minute here on Perspectives. We're back here on Perspectives talking about development issues in the city of Tallahassee. You can join us here. You can give us a call at 414-1234, or if you're outside the listening area, the number is 1-800-926-8809. And we've got Ann on the line. Ann is here on line one, and she actually had a question regarding the Tallahassee Airport and back to those issues of direct flights. Ann?
Yes, I'm wondering why there is no direct flight to and from Raleigh, North Carolina. You know, now you have to go – you have a big layover in Charlotte.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I've my son and daughter-in-law and my three grandchildren live in Raleigh, and I wish there was a direct flight too, because you're either going to go through Atlanta on one airline or you got to go through Charlotte on the other. You know, Raleigh is not a hub per se, and I think what we look at or the airlines look at is a regional airport like ours is connecting to a hub. So right now we connect to Atlanta. We connect to Charlotte. We connect to Dallas. Those are the hubs that from there you can get to just about anywhere in the country. So as much as I would like to see a direct flight to Raleigh for own personal reasons, I think probably the next one we'd be looking at is either Chicago or New York. I know we're pursuing those simply because once you get to Chicago, New York, you can then have just about any overseas flight you want.
Gotcha. And Frank is here online too, and he actually wanted to talk about Cascades Park. Frank, you still there?
Yes, I am. Thanks.
Greetings. Good morning.
Yeah, I just wanted to congratulate anyone and everyone who had anything to do with Cascades Park, because I really think you hit a home run with that. And it shows how important brick-and-mortar development is in a city. But I also wanted to raise the issue of human development in cities and to talk about the real, real desperate need that we have to develop the human beings in urban areas. Because if we don't do that, that will undermine the beauty of this city and many other cities. It already has.
Gotcha. Thank you so much, Frank. And this actually plays into something that an initiative that the city is developing called Southside Cares. We have not talked much about that initiative, but that seems to be falling into what Frank is talking about on human development, trying to get more resources into an area of our city that has been kind of underrepresented and many would say underutilized. Commissioner?
Yeah, we in particular, it's referred to South City, which is bordered by, let's see, is Magnolia on the north and Orange Avenue on the south and Paul Russell Road. No. I forgot the one on the west. And then over on the, the west is Monroe and on the east, and I'm runs in front of Rickards High School. I'm drawing a blank.
Jim
and
Lee.
I apologize. Jim Lee. Where we have some infrastructure needs. Clearly, we have some elevated crime issues there. We've got a lot of young people without jobs. And because of that, an awful lot of bad things happen. And so it has taken far too long, but we are taking a special effort into creating hopefully some infrastructure improvements down there. We're also doing bringing a lot more health care into that area. There exists a food desert right now because of the closing
of
Harvey's.
The Harvey's.
I will say, and I can't go into great detail, but I know there is another grocer that is looking at that market in that area. And so we need to look at it. And I think I understand what you're trying to say as far as the question, but there are things more than just bricks and mortar that we need to be doing. And we have this effort that is in place that is still in its infancy because we have to assign some dollars to it, which will come before the commission probably in our budget cycle in September again. But we recognize that it's an area that needs special attention, not to mention our other areas. But one thing we have learned is you can't attack everything at once and try to find some successes in one area and then we can take it where other areas have similar issues.
Gotcha. And now Fred is here on line three and he wants to go back to the issue of bicycle lanes. And I think that's a question for Wayne here. Fred, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Good morning.
How you doing?
I am alive and well and trying really hard to stay that way. Go ahead with your question.
Well, I know you guys have touched on the subject previously on this, but my concern is the mixing of bicycle traffic with vehicular traffic. And particularly, there's an example on Miccosukee Road between Tennessee and Magnolia where bicycle designations have been put in the middle of the lane. And in some cases, you have people with bicycles with the wagons carrying their kids in the middle of 5 o'clock traffic. And I was wondering about the wisdom of mixing those two elements that are incompatible.
Gotcha. Wayne, this one's for you. He's talking about those sharrows, I think they're called.
That's right. Again, a county roadway inside the city limits, but just the fact that you're seeing people using the road identifies that there's a need in our community for that facility. So how do we do it? In particular, in that area, there is absolutely no additional right-of-way where we can go out and build these facilities and widen the roadway because of the constraints and the cost of doing so. So where we have those bicyclists mixed inside the lane of the roadways, we try to be very, very careful in where we put those. Number one, if you notice, the speed limit in that area is probably 25 to 30 mile an hour. That is how we try to protect both the motorists and the bicyclists in those areas. So that's not necessarily our preferred manner of doing it. We like to have those designated facilities separate from the vehicle traffic. But sometimes we just have no other options, and we try to do the best we can to provide for the safety. And I think reducing the speeds is the number one way of doing that.
Gotcha.
You know, one of the reasons why we another one of the reasons why we really like seeing redevelopment within the Central Core is tax dollars. For the most part, we don't want to build new roads. We don't want to build new schools. We don't want to build new healthcare facilities. We don't want to build all those things that typically take tax dollars. And quite frankly, somebody on that bicycle is probably paying the same homeowners taxes and ad valorem taxes that go to the city and the county as somebody that drives a vehicle. And I, for one, quite frankly, would like to see more people on bicycles. I think it has less impact on our roads and brings people closer in. So as much as we want people to share, quite frankly, I think our drivers need to have a little more caution when they come to those lights and when they pass bicyclists.
And just for a second here, we want to go to line four. MJ is on the line, and I think it's actually one of my really good friends, MJ, here that's on the line, and she has an issue regarding the medians. MJ, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Good morning.
Good morning. Speaking of trying to stay alive and well, my issue with the medians in Tallahassee is that many of them are not well marked. I often drive on Tharp Street heading west to turn on Ocala, and that median is not marked. There's not even bright yellow paint. And I have a suggestion, and my suggestion would be about four yellow cat eyes put on the ends of medians. I don't know which is cheaper, that or the paint, but it seems that the paint fades out. And as someone who's getting older and my night vision is not great, I would really appreciate some indicator that there's a big old bump right there.
So, MJ, yeah, let me ask you a question, MJ. Do you have a handheld device or, you know, like a – I don't want to use a product name, but something that you can take a photo and then transmit it?
Sure, I could take photos all over.
So if you go to your app, whatever your app store is, and type in Digitally, Digitally, there's an app that allows you to take a photo of something you see that's bothersome, and you can send it to the appropriate department, and pretty darn quick they'll get somebody out there to inspect it, and if it requires improvements, they'll do that. It's something that not enough people probably know that's out there, but it's something that we put out there because we really want to know when there's a problem with a median or a cracked sidewalk or something else that's going to create harm for anyone. We want to know about it so we can fix it as quickly as possible.
Yeah, and we really rely on our citizens to help us identify those areas that we need to look at. So consider your request made, and I will make sure I get that request to the right department to look into.
Well, in the time that we have left, there are two issues that I kind of want to bring them together, and that is the Tallahassee Mall that I know everyone has heard about many of the plans in store for that area, and the issue of housing, and I want to bring them together because in Tallahassee Mall, it's supposed to be developed as kind of a mixed-use concept. And I'm just curious. I know that there have been several meetings about what's going to happen with that area in general. Who can tell us more about what should we be expecting? This is already in effect. It's going down, so to speak. So, I mean, what's happening?
I'm going to touch on something quickly, then, Will. I think you probably have some information, too. You know, North Monroe Street from Tharp Street to the interstate is a big problem.
Mm-hmm. It's almost barren.
It's declining, and it declines every year. And we can nibble around the edges, and we can try to make a little fix here by doing something a little there. But until Tallahassee Mall is redeveloped as a vibrant entity, commercial, retail, residential, the whole road system is going to continue to suffer. So it was a real complicated issue before between the land and who owned the land and who owned the buildings, and that's been resolved. There is a singular owner that is now in place that is stepping forward, and I know they met with some of our folks in our building department, growth management, to talk about what they want to do there. The things that I've heard, because I've had a brief conversation with them, is very exciting, and we're going to see the improvements in that facility, I think, that will then create a need for other development along the road system, a lot of things that have closed. If I were a young person, not in college, past college, it would, based upon what I've heard, it would be a place that I would look at probably wanting to live because there's going to be retail, restaurants, entertainment. They're talking about building a substantial amphitheater, and yet it's 7 to 10 minutes from our downtown. So it's something that I think will improve the entire road system. So that's important to me. Will, you can probably address the housing situation better.
Because if I'm not a college student, my options are kind of limited here in Tallahassee. And something, and I do hope you can speak to this, that I've been hearing is that, you know, maybe we've maxed out on college living space. What I think someone is calling it, it's here in my papers, but basically it's kind of like, you know, an overflow of college housing. Maybe we've gone too far in that area, and we need to start looking at, you know, those of us who are no longer in school.
The private sector is absolutely responding to that demographic trend. I do think that we are overbuilt in the student housing market, especially if you're located outside of what is really the defined urban core. If you're still in our downtown, our newly developing downtown, which has got several boroughs in it now, if you will, you've got College Town, you've got College Park developing, you've got Capitol Hill. I mean, some really cool things happening.
The one on Tennessee.
Yeah. So in those markets, I think they're going to continue to be very, very successful, college housing. And it's beginning to move from college housing to for sale product, condominiums, boutique hotels. I mean, it's maturing. So it's going to be more even within the confines of the downtown for a broader demographic selection, people other than students. Cascades Park, Commissioner Ziffer referred to that earlier. I think you're going to see a tremendous housing response in and around Cascades Park. That's going to not be a student-driven product. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a young professional, empty nester. It's probably not going to be for the family with three kids necessarily. But that is in the works right now. And the city just and the CRA just made what I consider to be a very wise decision in working with Florida State to swap some properties around where it's to the benefit of FSU and to the city and the county. I think that's going to be very, very helpful. Back to the Tallahassee Mall, I think that you're going to see that that's going to be catalytic. Just as the stuff in College Town and Gain Street was catalytic to changing our downtown, I certainly think that what they have planned out there in terms of mixed use, the amount of capital, is exciting. They've got housing. They've got lodging. They've got all the different things that they want to put in place to be successful. I expect them to be successful. It's immediately going to change from I-10 down to that property. You know, you talk about the entire 27 North Corridor. Going out to I-10 is just as important as coming back down to the downtown. And once you start, then it accelerates the redevelopment. Right. So I think it's going to be a very, very positive thing. And as Gil said earlier, we needed to get the legal constraints put behind us out there. That's done. We've got a good developer, and they're working with the city, and I'm excited about the opportunities.
Let's go to line one. Jennifer is on the line, and she actually wants to talk about reflective paint. I think this goes back to the question that MJ asked earlier. Jennifer, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Good morning.
Good morning. I'd like to piggyback on what the previous caller said, not only for medians, but just divided highways. If there's, you know, multiple lanes, when it rains, you can hardly see those lines. And I think it's a very minimal cost to the city and the county to actually repaint those lines. There is actually a designation called Light City, which some of the cities out in the West Coast have been designated as a result of their efforts to improve the visibility for seniors or anyone that has limited and decreasing vision.
Wonderful. Thank you. Thank you so much, Jennifer. Wayne, I think that is your question.
Again, just thank you for calling in and giving us your ideas, because we do know that we look at various options of doing the right thing and the best thing for our community. There are studies going on right now throughout the community as to what surface holds up the best. If you notice, some intersections will paint, and then within a short period of time, it goes away.
It's
so
gone.
So we're looking at continuously the public works departments are saying, well, what is the best fit for the traffic volumes and to make sure it stays as long as possible? Because at the end of the day, we don't want to keep painting the surfaces either.
Let me just very quickly, and I think Will briefly said it, this is a community in transition. Five years ago, Gain Street was what it was. Cascades Park was just beginning construction. Franklin Boulevard flooded. FAMU Way with an extension and realignment was just in the drawing stages. There are an awful lot of things happening in this community now that we really never thought were possible. And we're in this transition stage where you see new retailers coming to town that we never thought, Urban Outfitters, I mean, to name one, but an awful lot of that are looking at moving to this community because they see it growing, they seeing that younger demographic.
Yes.
We're changing. It's not easy. You know, it's almost like an adolescent. There are growing pains, like we probably don't get enough reflective paint out there, and there are other things we need to do. But I am so convinced this is going to be it's a good city now. We're going to be a great city in a few years because of things that those of us around the table know can happen, and they probably will happen.
Well, and the decisions that have happened recently to put those things in place. We are absolutely on the corporate radar now. We were not 5 years ago. And so when that happens, it creates more tax revenue, a different kind of economy where people want to stay, and all that provides additional revenue so that things like reflective paint and bike lanes and the redevelopment of otherwise declining areas can occur. So I agree. I tell everybody we've finally grown out of the teenage years.
Yeah, we have.
We're into our college years.
And we have actually an email here from a listener who says, you know, at the end of the day, what needs to be done to get more flights out of Tallahassee?
You know, it's the chicken and the egg thing. And that is, if we get more of a corporate identity here with more businesses, more people flying in out of the city, airfares come down. On the other hand, in order to get that, it would be helpful if we had lower airfares. We as a city and as a government are trying to do what we can by lowering costs so that those landing fees come down, as I mentioned earlier, so that the airfares come down. It's difficult because, once again, we're a regional airport. We're going after international designation, which would be helpful because, once again, those underutilized airspace. But we're working on it.
Gotcha. And, Wayne, I'm going to give you the last word.
Well, just thank you for having us here today. We are so proud of Tallahassee and Leon County. We think we have a beautiful city that's well-kept, well-maintained, and we love our community.
Thank you all
so
much.
Thank you.
Perspectives is produced by WFSU here in Tallahassee. Technical assistance is provided by Taylor Cox, and Lydell Rawls handles the phones. I'm Lynn Hatter. You can join us again next week when our regular host, Tom Flanagan, is back in the chair to resume the local election shows and get your input here on Perspectives.
Audio copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcast. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.